Does anybody find life hard sometimes? Anybody? But here's the good news. If you find life hard, it's not that you're doing it wrong. It just sometimes life is hard. Sometimes life just hurts. It's just that way. Sometimes life can be unbearably hard. You know, there's a central affirmation, a central theological thought that we center ourselves around. It's pretty simple and profound. God is with us. You're not alone. God is with us. Love is with us. It says in the book of Romans 8, it says, there is nothing in all creation. There is nothing in life or death. There's no principalities or powers. There's no structures. There's no systems. There is nothing, nothing, nothing that can ever separate us from God's love revealed to us in Jesus Christ. Nothing. God is with us. Love is with us. You know, the central primary purpose of the church is to be a witness of that truth. That's our job. That's our calling. That's our mission. Our job, our calling, our mission is to show up when life is hard and to let people know you're not alone. God is with you. We're with you. Love is with you. Yesterday we had a memorial service. I'm just going to lean here. We had a memorial service in the sanctuary for Rosanna Dubereau. This church and the deacons of this church provided a space to let people know in their grief, you're not alone. God is with you. Love is with you. We open the doors of this church 7 days a week. 7 days a week, over 200 people come into this building each and every week for recovery groups. So over 200 people are seeking healing for their addictions. Why do we do that? You're not alone. God is with you. We're with you. Love is with you. Why we present prayer shawls to people and to the hospital, and why, as Connie said, we visit particularly those folks who are finding life hard, you're not alone. God is with you. We're with you. Love is with you. Why does Morgan try to create a safe space for teenagers? Oh my gosh, if you're a teenager, I'm so glad that part is done in my life. I can't imagine what it'd be like to be a teenager today. It can be incredibly hard. Why do we invest in that? You're not alone. You're not alone. Love is with you. That's the mission. That's the mission of the church. Naomi Tutu, the daughter of Desmond Tutu, said, "To love is to see." We turn away so often. To love is to see. To see, to look. To be loved is the feeling of being seen. This past week, somebody, one of you, said to me, "How are you?" I said, "I'm okay." And this person paused. And in this incredible stillness, looked at me and said, "No, really, how are you?" He was able to see past the mask because I was pretending to be okay. You know, we present to each other our strengths, don't we? We present to each other our togetherness. But probably the one thing we all share in common is that beneath that togetherness, beneath what we present to each other, are our struggles, our fears, our insecurities, the wounds that we keep hidden. Everybody, every single person is fighting some battle. Every single person is carrying some wound. Every carrying some weight. Every single person is hiding some wound, facing some fear. What I've discovered again and again and again, the people who seem the most together are often the very ones who are hanging by that very tiny, tiny thread, right? You're going to meet somebody today, I guarantee you, if you haven't met that person already, who appears on the surface so together, but inside feeling so alone and fragile. What we share most in common is that life is hard. I think probably one of the things that's most important these days is to see each other, to turn towards each other, to see past the mask. When Lori was in the ICU at OHSU, you know, there was a nurse. There was great nurses every day. There was one nurse, for some reason, I trusted her immediately. I don't know why. I've never met this person in my entire life. But I just had this sense of I was breathing easier in her presence. And I was wondering, what is it about her? I mean, I've never met this person in my life. And then it struck me. She saw me. She looked. She saw. She didn't awkwardly look at her notes or fumble with the IV tube as I asked those questions that couldn't be answered. She saw me. She saw that my heart was breaking and was able to hold the broken edges in the kindness of her gaze. You know, she may have been a medical professional. She was also a healer. I felt she was a partner in the healing process. You know, I confess, I'm still healing. I'm okay. Actually, I'm not okay, but I'm okay. But I'm not as okay as I pretend to be okay. I may kind of try to present to you, you know, I got it, I'm together. But inside, feeling a little fragile. Anybody with me? How beautiful it is when we can turn to each other and see each other. You know, there's this great theological idea that I presented at the very beginning of the service, this theological idea that God has turned God's face towards us in Jesus. And it's the face of love. And if we had to kind of narrow our calling down to a nutshell, our job is to turn our face to each other, to not look away, to not turn away, to not avoid, but to turn towards the pain. You know, there are three movements in relationships, particularly under stress. We either move away from people, we move against people, or we move towards people and try to find that connection with people. And there is so much division and polarity in our society right now. Increasingly, what we're witnessing are people moving against each other. And depression and loneliness and addiction are at epidemic levels as we're moving away from each other and more people are feeling a sense of isolation. There's this remarkable story in the Gospel of Mark that I think sums up what our call is as people of faith. Our call is to move towards each other, to move towards the pain. And Morgan's going to read it.
A leper came to Jesus, begging him. And kneeling, he said to him, "If you choose, you can make me clean." Moved with compassion, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I do choose. Be made clean." Immediately the leprosy left him. He was made clean. And Jesus sent him away, saying to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded as a witness to them." But he went out and began to proclaim it freely and to spread the word, so that Jesus could no longer go into a town openly, but stayed out in the country. And people came to him from every quarter. The word of the Lord.
Always beware when the pastor takes his coat off. They say that when a preacher says, in conclusion, it Jesus, I'm just getting started. The story of this man has leprosy. What's really interesting in the story about leprosy in the time of Jesus really meant you had a rash. Meant there was a skin discoloration or maybe some kind of outburst in your skin. Something not normal was happening in your skin. In fact, leprosy, what we know in our day is called Hansen's disease. The modern form of leprosy wasn't actually discovered or identified in Palestine till years later than this particular story. So when it says a man had leprosy, it's not the leprosy that we think. More than likely, he had a rash. I don't want to get too personal. I have a rash in my leg right here. In Hebrew culture, I would have been regarded as having leprosy. So when you have some kind of discoloration, some kind of abnormality in your skin, your job was to go to the priest. And the priest would take one look at your skin and declare you unclean. Now we don't use the word unclean in our culture today. But we declare people unacceptable. We cast people aside. We determine who's in and who's out. We say some people are unwelcome. Some people are less worthy than other people. So what would happen is if you had leprosy, if the priest declared you to have leprosy, you were banished. You were banished from your family, banished from the community. You had to wear your hair long and torn clothes so that people would identify you. Because if they could identify you, they would throw rocks at you to keep you away. And if you had leprosy and somebody was coming near you for some reason, this wasn't just a physical problem of a skin rash. This was a religious problem. The religious law said you had to place your right hand over your mouth. It's in the book of Leviticus. Your right hand over your mouth. And if somebody came near you, you had to shout, "Unclean! Unclean!" so that they could throw a rock at you. Or at least keep a distance. Can you imagine the isolation of that? The pain of that? The suffering of that? So not just a physical issue. Imagine the emotional and psychological issue. The person in the story that we just read was completely separated from love and separated from worthiness. And what makes matters worse, the law says somebody with leprosy, somebody with a skin rash, couldn't touch anyone or be touched. I remember in my church that I served in Australia, David had AIDS. He lived in America. But he was Australian, and he returned to Australia to die. And he came to the church, and you could tell David was sick. You could tell. And he was always really cold, and this church was really freezing most of the time. So he always had this blanket around him to try to keep himself warm. Now, I'll confess, David would sit in the pew, and people kept a distance. My eldest son, Jacob, who's now 27, was two or three at the time. I don't know why. Jacob loved David. And, And Jacob would seek David out. And he would find David, and he would crawl into David's lap. And that's where he'd choose to be during worship. It's to sit in David's lap. Well, after one Sunday, David found me after one of the first Sundays where Jacob did that, and he was bawling, he was just tears. And David said, outside of pokes and prods and needles, I hadn't been touched in 3 months until Jacob crawled into my lap. So in the story, not only could a leper not touch, but if you touched a leper, you would then be regarded as unclean. So if you can imagine the desperation of this man, completely severed from love, completely severed from his worthiness, the desperation, he hears Jesus is coming. So he literally like throws himself on the ground. He breaks all customs. He's not supposed to go near. We can imagine as he approached Jesus, people threw rocks at him. And it says, he said, Jesus, if you choose, you can make me clean. Notice he didn't ask to be cured from leprosy. He asked to be made clean. That's what the priest did. The priest declared someone clean. The priest declared someone clean so you could be reconnected to community, restored to your family, restored to love. Well, then it says Jesus saw him. Dang it. It says Jesus saw him and moved towards him, reached out, and touched him. We think, so what? In the time of Jesus, it would have been shocking, scandalous. One person said, the reason the church is declining is not theology. It's that the church has stopped being scandalous and radical in the way it chooses to love. In touching the man, Jesus made himself unclean, took on the man's condition. And Jesus says, I do choose. Be clean. And then if you notice in the story, Jesus sends him back to the priest, sends him back to the religious establishments. In some ways, as a witness to say to those religious authorities, you do not have the power to determine who's clean and unclean. You don't have the authority to determine who's in and who's out, who's worthy and who's not worthy. Jesus brought a love greater than those rules and restrictions and regulations we try to impose on love. Jesus touched someone everybody else regarded as untouchable. He saw someone everybody else ignored. He moved towards someone people threw rocks at. Now, the story says his skin became clear. I suspect it did. But the real healing, the extraordinary healing in the story, is that Jesus broke through the barrier that kept this man isolated in his pain and his suffering and said, love is with you. And he restored the man. He said, be clean, be clean. I choose. He restored him to his family. He restored him to his community. He restored him to love. You know, when that happens, I suspect any kind of rash goes away. Life is hard. Sometimes unbearably hard. There are too many people alone in their pain. Robert Theobald, a futurist, said, the 20th century was the century of getting ahead. And we have raced ahead. And in racing ahead, we've left so many behind, so many out, We've left so many alone. The 21st century, he said, must be the century of healing. And stop looking to somebody else to be the healer. Because we are the healers. We are the medicine we all need. The story says, Jesus saw him, moved towards him, reached out, touched him, and said, I do choose. Do we? Do we choose? May we choose to see, to move towards those who are in pain. And we might discover that it's our lives are the lives that are being healed.